Gospel reductionism replaces the Bible as the source and norm of theology with the gospel. What would a gospel reductionist edition of Luther's Small Catechism look like? Find out in the latest issues, etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Dr. Russell Dawn details his journey from Anglicanism to Lutheranism. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org. There is a trend among millennials and others to declutter, simplify, to minimalize their lives. Make it simpler, less things. What about less priorities that really don't draw us back together as a family? You could take your house and reduce the number of objects in the house. What about the objectives in the house, especially as it relates to that family being together, having something as simple as time together, just being in the same room with one another, which is in many families a very rare thing indeed. We're going to be talking about parental minimalism on this Wednesday afternoon, September the 18th. Deaconess Rose Adel joins us. She's a pastor's wife and mother of six children. She teaches online deaconess courses for Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. She's co-author of the book Ladylike, Living Biblically, and author of a recent column titled Christian Parent's Guide to Minimalism. Rose, welcome back.
Thanks for the invitation.
Let's talk a little bit generally about that millennial generation that is really into decluttering, simplifying, minimalism with regard to the objects in their life. But as you say, not so much with regard to the objectives in their life.
Right. So this push for minimalism has just become, I think, the thing that's trending. So as soon as it's trending, people get excited about it and people read about it and they do think that seems like a simpler, better way to live. I don't need to have, you know, my apartment or my house stuffed as full as it can possibly be stuffed. I can live more simply and that can be a happy thing. And it just seems like a less complicated and also it seems less greedy. So I think there's an appeal there because they don't want to be greedy. I think there's a generosity on their part. And they also figure if this is what's going on right now, it's probably going on for good reason and I'm going to get in on it. So I think there are probably some good motivations behind it and also some going with the flow motivations behind it.
For those of us who don't follow this trend toward simplification or a minimal life, can you describe it for us? What is this trend or this fad?
I think a big push of the trend or fad is don't have what you don't need. So you, and it comes out in different ways. Like I knew someone, this is before a Thanksgiving feast, and we were just talking about, you know, you can't wait to overeat and the food's going to be so good and aren't you excited? And he says, I think I'll just eat what my body needs. And it, in a righteous way, it kind of landed flatly with me because I thought we were there to really overindulge. And he was giving an example of how that overindulgence wasn't needed. He was going to eat what his body needed to get through his day according to its physical needs and not just according to just, you know, kind of this gluttony that the rest of us were going to be involved in. And so then I think that idea, that concept can find itself in many different areas of life, right? So it can also mean I don't actually need my closet to be absolutely full. It's more like I could just do fine with 10 essential articles of clothing that I rotate thoughtfully. So it's saying this obsession with accumulation is not really healthy or necessary. It also, I think, has to do with caring about the planet. So there, and this is a very popular thing going on now, is caring about the planet, which is great. God created it, so we are to tend it and care for it. And so they're thinking, if we can get by with fewer resources, we should. And since we can, we will.
Does it go along with the trend toward self-sufficiency? Kind of, we don't want to be dependent on the big system, the grid, whatever that grid may be, the grocery store, whatever it may be. I'm going to grow my own this. I'm going to do my own that.
Yes, there is also a coolness in homesteading. And I do think that's part of it, because then you can say, I don't need the system. I can do it my own way. And there is a satisfaction in that. There's a satisfaction in thinking, yeah, I don't need to be told what to buy. You can't push me around like a consumer. I'm going to decide I don't want to buy all those things, and I'm going to be fine without them.
You say if we can adopt this kind of attitude toward the things in our lives, we can still at the same time, in terms of our objectives, remain very cluttered and really very distracted, distended. What are you talking about there?
I think there's this idea that if you're a minimalist, you're a very focused person, or, you know, a very streamlined person. But in many ways, even though you could say, I live sparsely and, you know, I'm not someone who's going to be junking up my environment, my personal space, yet that doesn't necessarily mean that you're heart and soul and mind are, you know, completely in the right place. It might just mean you're focusing your efforts in one particular direction while not even paying much attention to things like character and virtue in other directions.
When you talk about minimalist parenting, you're not talking about having as few children as possible.
No, definitely.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, we like a lot of kids. No, I'm talking about things that you can do to simplify your home life, regardless of the number of children. So I think that the things that I recommend in the article I wrote are good for a family of any size. If you're a parent, and really some of these things could even just be good for any Christian, you can think more in terms of not how can I get by with fewer things, but more how can I get by being less drawn into some of the worldly objectives, as opposed to just feeling satisfied with having gotten rid of a lot of worldly objects.
But this isn't ultimately about eliminating the unnecessary in our lives. This is about realizing what is necessary
exactly
in our lives, isn't it, in terms
right
of family?
Right. It is definitely that. It's recognizing what are the things that are important to us as a family, as a home, and what are the things that are getting in the way of that? So what is cluttering that goal of focusing on what's important for us as a Christian family and what our priorities are? And there are definitely things getting in the way of that that we might not even recognize, just because we are, you know, in many ways, Christians are living like the world we're in. And so we don't take the time to think about what could I reduce or eliminate that would get us more focused on our lives as Christians, our days together as Christians, and how we're serving the Lord in our homes.
How is a prioritizing of things in our lives, which is what we're really talking about, how is it different for Christians and non-Christians?
For Christians, there should always be a priority on the life of faith, the life that we're called to in Christ. And so for us to wake up every day and our goal is not necessarily to get our life to either resemble or not resemble what the world is doing right or what the world is doing wrong, but it's to follow Christ's call. It's to take up the cross and follow him. And it is, as parents especially, to make that the primary focus in our homes and to instill that in our children as a more important path than any other path that the world would offer.
You say that we should minimize the poles that scatter families. What are you talking about there?
Yeah, so that's my first suggestion of things that a Christian parent could minimize to help their family be more focused on a Christian life and a Christian approach. What I'm talking about there is, and the article kind of describes it, that families spend so much time apart from one another now. And a lot of this is just going to be built into our lives. There are things we can't get around. And so in the article I mentioned, you know, the usual work day for the working adult is in the 9 or 10 hour range, sometimes much more. The usual school day for a child whose school age is in the 7 or 8 hour range, sometimes quite a bit more because of extensions we can put on the front or put on the back. And so I just want readers of the article to sit and think about all of this time that we're spending apart is going to affect how we are as a family unit. So I have heard a lot of people noticing that there's a breakdown of the family. You've probably read plenty of articles and even heard segments on local news about the breakdown of the family. We have this problem with the breakdown of the family. And I do think there are a lot of, quantifiably, there are a lot of shattered families. There are broken home lives. But what we aren't noticing is that all of the scattered families, not yet shattered, but scattered, are setting themselves up for the kind of just not feeling close to one another that then later they say in life, I just don't feel close. And what I'm suggesting here is actual physical closeness is good for families. Being in the same home together is good for families. Being close to one another. Like when Christ calls us to love one another, I think we can all agree that ways we demonstrate love is by what we say and by what we do. But children can't hear their parents express love to them if they aren't together. And children can't see their parents show love through their actions if they aren't within seeing range of one another. So getting ourselves back in the home together for more waking hours. Obviously, we can't spend every moment together, but making it a priority that we spend some moments together will give us more opportunity to speak love to each other and show love to each other.
It has been observed for decades and decades that the simple act of sitting down together for family meals is a great stabilizer of families and of marriages. But it strikes me, Deaconess, that that's kind of the result of a lot of other priorities being aligned correctly. You don't get everybody at the same table without having to say no to some other things that would compete with that.
Right, exactly. And there have been studies demonstrating the value of a family meal together. Also, all of us in the church, I hope at some point, have heard the importance of having a family devotion together. And there have been very sincere Christians that I've met who have told me, well, that simply isn't possible for our family. And when I have asked more questions with the goal of understanding, they've said there is no time during an average day, let's say Monday through Friday, there is no time when we are all together in this house at the same time. None. And I say, well, it doesn't have to be before bed, or it doesn't have to be at any given moment, just sometime when you're together. And they say, not at all. None. So there are no meals being shared, and there are also no family devotions happening in those homes, just because they have said yes to so many things that pull them away from each other and haven't been willing to say no for the sake of being brought together at some point during the week.
Deaconess Rose Adel is our guest, author of a recent column titled Christian Parents' Guide to Minimalism. We'll talk about easing up on the love of money and what it actually looks like after this. Issues, etc. Regular guest, Pastor Brian Wolfmiller, is the author of our book of the month for September, A Martyr's Faith in a Faithless World. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or learn more about A Martyr's Faith in a Faithless World at issuesetc.org. Deepen your understanding of Lutheran theology with the new book, A Martyr's Faith in a Faithless World, by Pastor Brian Wolfmiller.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
You're invited to Oktoberfest featuring the Waterloo German Band Friday night, October 18th at St. Paul Lutheran School in Hamel, Illinois. Oktoberfest features a traditional German buffet dinner, silent and oral auctions, and of course, beer. Tickets are $15. Attendance is limited to 200. Proceeds benefit St. Paul Lutheran School, the only classical Lutheran school in Greater St. Louis. Learn more and purchase tickets at school.stpaulhamel.org. Oktoberfest is sponsored in part by Seavers Equipment, Lutheran Church Extension Fund, Ernst Heating and Cooling, Lutheran Public Radio, St. Paul's Ladies' Aid, Chick-fil-A, and Baker Construction. Oktoberfest, Friday night, October 18th at St. Paul Lutheran School in Hamel, Illinois. school.stpaulhamel.org.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about parental minimalism with Deaconess Rose Adel. She's a pastor's wife and mother of six children. She teaches online deaconess courses at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and she's co-author of the book Ladylike, Living Biblically, and a recent column titled Christian Parents' Guide to Minimalism. Rose, you also suggest easing up on the love of money. That's easier said than done. What does it actually look like?
Yeah, so when I was thinking about things that we should work on reducing that are cluttering our more our hearts and our minds than our homes, I thought the love of money is a problem. And I thought even for minimalists, they can feel really good to say, hey, I only own 4 pairs of shoes and I used to own 40. But if you said to that person, well, how would you feel if your bank account reduced by the exact same proportion? There would be wild discomfort in that. No one is going to sign up for that. No one is going to feel comfortable with that. And it's kind of a dramatic figure to hold out as an example. But the point is, I think that there are people who are proud of their minimalism, but yet feel comfortable knowing I have plenty of money. So if I give away 5 of my sweaters and then I have an occasion in which I would have liked to have one of those, I can just go buy another. And so there's still a security in the money, even if it's not in the actual physical objects. And so then I was thinking, well, how can I help people actually think about a concrete way to reduce their love of money? Because the love of money is so abstract. You know, it's just, you can't wrap your hands around it. If it's just something you feel or something that's important to you, it's more of a value. And then I thought, no, there are things we could concretely do to help us reduce this love of money that most of us naturally struggle with. So when I was trying to think about how can I help my own self, because I also love money, how can I help my own self? And I thought the first thing I could do would be to think about it less, to worry about it less. But even that's kind of hard. And then I thought, what if I talk about it less? What if it's less of a centerpiece in a usual conversation in which you comment upon how much this costs or how much you saved? What if I talk about it less? Could that help me think about it less and worry about it less? And I think it could. People talk about money a lot. Listen to conversations. Money will find its way in there. And if you discipline yourself and say, I'm not going to talk about money, it will become less of the thing at the forefront of your mind. It will get further and further pushed back. And then the other thing I suggested, I thought, you know what? If that doesn't help, give away more of it. Give more of it away and you'll have less of it to think about. And I think that is very much in keeping with the Christian call to generosity and charity.
You also say that we should restrict R-rated material, which just sounds like kind of a hackneyed piece of you know, Christian advice. But this really impacts the moment-to-moment consumption that we do, especially via our devices and other things. Talk a little bit about that, if you would.
Yeah, this was the last area that I thought the Christian parents could try to minimize in their life for the good of their Christian family. And I think that parents are very concerned about monitoring their children's devices, which they should be. So I'm not suggesting anyone stop paying attention to how their kids are using their phones or their iPads or anything like that. I think we should care about what our children are seeing. But I've noticed that there's so much concern about things that aren't suitable for kids. But then grownups, we ourselves are very often drawn into things that we would kind of scurry to turn off or power down if our kid happened to glance over our shoulder. And then I've thought, well, is it good for us? If it's the kind of thing that we would be very quick to make sure our kids didn't see or didn't read or didn't listen to, that might be a good clue that it's just not something wholesome. It's not something that would be good for anyone. And so I suggested that parents could think about what they are consuming in terms of these things that come at us. I think we're at the point where we might even not consider them to be bad, but if we take a step back and say, okay, what about this material warranted that letter R? And then we say, do I need that in my life? I don't.
So I'm here to tell you, Rose, that you and your husband are the parents of smaller children, not necessarily small children. Mm-hmm. You got one more on the way. But I'm here to tell you that this doesn't get any easier when you get older. I'm now a grandparent. Kids are grown. And therefore, it's different getting together. But my wife and I, some weeks, are two ships passing in the night. Mm-hmm. I'm out of the house early. She's there. I'm here. We maybe come together again at the end of the day. Sometimes there are activities that take us both away. It's not any easier to set those priorities to bring us into the same house at the same time. It's not any easier than it was when we were younger, raising kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a lot of those things are absolutely necessary. What would you say to someone who's older and says, as many retired people do, I'm busier now than I was when I was working, kind of a thing. What would you say to them?
Well, especially in the context of the conversation about marriage, I would just comment that if we are actually physically drifting apart from one another to the degree that you're kind of describing here, it shouldn't surprise us if we also kind of feel that we've drifted emotionally or we don't feel connected to that person, because quite truly, quite literally, you aren't close to that person. And actually, there have been interesting studies about some reliable indicators of attraction to other people, and proximity comes up as a really strong indicator of attraction. So I think being close to your spouse will help you remain attracted to your spouse. And I do understand that jobs pull people in different directions, but it's one of those things that I would just encourage Christian couples, especially if they are feeling, you know, kind of that drifty feeling, that feeling that they aren't very close, or maybe they feel they don't know their spouse very well anymore. I've definitely talked to women who are further along in their years of marriage and their kids go away and they just say, I don't really feel close to my husband. I don't really know what's holding us together anymore. And my suggestion in those cases is always be together. If you don't understand what's holding you together, practice being together. Spend time with your husband and give yourself an actual geographic opportunity to be attracted to him again, because you're with each other, you're near each other. And whatever else is going on in terms of work or hobby or leisures that we might be pursuing, figure out a way to spend time together. It's really important.
What we've actually done is found some things that we can do together that would ordinarily take us apart from one another, but then we start doing those things together. We kind of forced ourselves to be
right
together. And even though it keeps us busier than we'd like to be,
yeah,
it is us doing something together, still that opportunity to serve one another, to show love to one another. And it doesn't have to be it's not rocket science, really.
Exactly.
In a lot
yeah.
of ways.
I think that's a great example. And it works on the family level too, when you still have younger children. Sometimes dad will say, I'm going to have to stop by and get something from Home Depot. And then he said, should I come pick up the family first? You know, so he knows he has to go run an errand. Should we all go to Home Depot? Yeah. You know what? Let's all go to Home Depot. And it's really funny because it seems like an odd way to spend time together, but it's accomplished. And that way it wasn't dad needing to go get his errand done, or, you know, there are other occasions when I need to go to the grocery store. Should we all go? Yeah, let's all go. Let's be together. Let's do it.
Finally, then, this is the kind of thing that has real life consequences, long-term consequences for our families. Our children are going to raise their children in a lot of ways, either the way they were raised or in reaction mm-hmm. to the way they were raised. Mm-hmm. I've noticed it with my kids. They want an uncomplicated life. And that's a lot of times it's a reaction to the way they were raised. And they want to sit down at the table all together. They want those things for themselves. Should we be thinking about that next generation?
We absolutely should. We definitely need to. I think that one of the things that parents can do to really give them something to take forward into their lives is to show them that something I've observed, this is an example. The dream Mother's Day is mom goes away and mom goes out to eat, mom goes to spa, and mom spends a whole day away from her children. And I'm not saying moms don't need breaks, and I love spas and restaurants. But if you're saying my favorite way to spend a day as a mom is away from my children, I don't think it sends the most loving signal. Why not say on Mother's Day, I can't wait to be surrounded by my kids because I love being a mom. I love being with my kids. I love spending time together. And make sure that even though every mom needs a break, every dad needs a break, don't act as though the only way to be able to relax or enjoy life is to do so by getting away from the kids. Rather, show the kids how much you enjoy life with them.
I'll give you an example of that, Rose. It just happened last night. My wife and I have been extraordinarily busy over the last couple months. And a drain pipe busted at my daughter's house and her husband needed to take care of it immediately. Mm-hmm. And she said, can you come over and spend some time with us this evening with the kids? And we just went for a walk. It was a lovely evening.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter at one point said, well, thanks for coming over and helping with the kids. And it immediately occurred to me, there's absolutely no better way for me to spend this evening. And I just said to her, what else would I be doing? I'd be mm-hmm. sitting at home watching the Cardinals game. But this is better.
Right.
This is actually so much better. And I really believe it is actually that much better. Just the chance to say, we're going to do something uncomplicated. We're not going to turn it into a big event. Mm-hmm. We're just going to go take a walk on a beautiful evening.
Yep, exactly. And showing the kids that what you love is being with them, not waiting for your next opportunity to sneak away, which I think is hard in some occasions. But just to always be sending your kid the signal, I love being with you. I love it when our family is together. That is when I am happy here. And when we are able to share God's love together and show God's love through what we say and what we do in a place where we can all see it happening.
We're talking with Deaconess Rose Adel and talking about parental minimalism. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the fact that daycare, well, many parents who have their kids in daycare will consider what she's suggesting as entirely impossible. Is it? Stay tuned.
Sanctifying your housework with the Word of God. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
I think every man, every Christian should consider, at least, the possibility of God calling him into the holy ministry.
Issues, Etc. regular guest, Dr. Carl Fekencher of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Because that's the way that God has designed for faith in Christ Jesus to be spread, for the gift of eternal life that Christ Jesus earned by his death and resurrection to be shared with people by the washing of baptism for infants and for adults, for the instruction, the proclamation of the word that happens on a nonstop basis in God's kingdom. God uses people, he uses men to be those proclaimers, to be those men who share the sacraments.
If you've ever considered becoming a pastor, contact Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Their phone number, 1-800-481-2155, 1-800-481-2155, or visit ctsfw.edu.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
We're wrapping up a conversation with Deaconess Rose Adel on parental minimalism. Then we'll conclude today's show getting a review of Stephen Hawking's final book, Brief Answers to the Big Questions, with Dr. Angus Manouge. The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for September comes from a listener favorite guest, Pastor Brian Wolf Miller. His latest is called A Martyr's Faith in a Faithless World. It's about the faith of martyrs, a kind of faith that perseveres under the attacks of the devil, the world, and our sinful flesh that perseveres unto death. You can find out more about A Martyr's Faith at our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House and ask for the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for September by Pastor Brian Wolf Miller, A Martyr's Faith, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Rose, I've saved this one for last because it's probably a difficult question, and that is, a lot of people listening to this have their kids in daycare before or after school, or sometimes all day long. And they're listening to this, and they might be saying, what you're suggesting here is impossible. How do you respond?
The first thing I would suggest, and maybe the person would already be doing it, but the first thing I would suggest is, any moment that you're with your child, show them how happy you are to be with them. So when you pick up your child, you know, let's say at 6 p.m., You go and you pick up your child at 6 p.m. and you say, this is such a happy part of my day, is getting to hold you in my arms and let's walk to the car together. And I can't wait to talk to you and hear what you did today and tell you about my day. And this is what I love, is being back together. Because there are some families that won't be able to do the kind of radical overhaul that people might think I'm saying is required. But yet you can still take so many of these concepts and just make them important in the time you have. So understanding you have the amount of time you have, and some things can't be changed. I understand that. There are circumstances that absolutely require what you're describing. And if you are in that category, like this can't be changed, just do everything you can with the time you have and show your child how much you love being with them when you're together.
Rose, what would you say about to that family that is over scheduled? Every kid has their activity. They all overlap. The mother spends a lot of time taxiing kids back and forth. And they have scheduled their children into too many both curricular and extracurricular activities.
Right. This would be these things, this time apart, I would call it, you know, kind of non-essential time apart. So there's essential time apart, and that's the workday and that's the school day for most families. And then there is non-essential time apart. And that is what I see when there's just this, you know, shuffling in so many different directions, none of which lead to home. And I do think that for families who are really into this, they are missing out on the kind of free time, unstructured time where family life could be strengthened and supported at home. And they're trading it for something, but I don't think that what they're trading it for is better. And some arguments are along the lines of, well, I want my kid to understand teamwork. And that's fine. But I think most people would agree that there's a bigger problem with people being prepared for family life than there's a problem with people being prepared for teamwork. I see people working effectively, you know, in any manner of teams, but I see a lot of families falling apart. So what's more important? Your child will be a really good team player, or your child will understand what it means to be a husband or a wife or a mother or a father. And the place where they can learn that is at home with their family. And so we have to be mindful of what we're missing out on if we're trading it for something else.
Deaconess Rose Adel is a pastor's wife and mother of six children. She teaches online deaconess courses for Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. She's co-author of the book Ladylike, Living Biblically, and author of a recent column titled Christian Parents Guide to Minimalism. You can read it for yourself at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand, Archives. Deaconess, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
We will review Stephen Hawking's final book, Brief Answers to the Big Questions, with Dr. Angus Manoj on the other side of the break. Well, there's a lot of things Hawking knew, a lot of things that he speculated about. Was he a victim of scientism? We'll talk about that first after this.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death, and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
Register your high schooler today for Careers for Christ Weekend at Concordia University Chicago. From October 4th through 6th, spend the weekend with Lutheran youth, connect with CUC faculty, staff, and students, explore our Lutheran teacher education, DCE, deaconess, director of parish music, and pre-seminary programs. Sign up now at cuchicago.edu/c4c. That's cuchicago.edu/c4c.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Gospel reductionism replaces the Bible as the source and norm of theology with the gospel. What would a gospel reductionist edition of Luther's Small Catechism look like? Find out in the latest Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Dr. Russell Dawn details his journey from Anglicanism to Lutheranism. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/Luther Academy.